Good morning. And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am Sandy Ingham, Prairie's consulting minister. We here aspire to be both open-hearted and open-minded. And we welcome you, no matter your ethnic or religious background, whatever your color, your gender identity, your sexual orientation, your family structure, we welcome you, no matter what your age or your abilities or inabilities, but most importantly, no matter where you are on this journey of life, the spiritual journey. If this is one of your first times here, we always urge you to come more than once because our services can be very different on Sunday mornings. Sometimes I do them, sometimes one of our people from within the congregation will do the service, and often we have outside speakers. The opening words are by W.E.B. Du Bois. Now is the accepted time, not tomorrow, not some more convenient season. It is today that our best work can be done, and not some future day or future year. It is today that we fit ourselves for the greater usefulness of tomorrow. Today is the seed time. Now are the hours of work. And tomorrow comes the harvest and the playtime. Again, words from W.E.B. Du Bois. We light this chalice to remind ourselves that, in the words of Du Bois, the prayer of our souls is a petition for persistence, not for the one good deed or single thought, but deed and thought on thought, until day, calling unto day, shall make a life worth living. I had originally intended to use some words by Howard Thurman for the reading, but then I heard about Frederick Douglass, who is apparently still living. Those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, somebody's president, not mine, said in a, initially I heard it was at the prayer breakfast, but it was not. It was in a gathering with Afro-American leaders. He spoke of Frederick Douglass.
He's doing great things.
Amazing things. Yes. I'm glad, because we need him. Suffragette, he was. Feminist, he was. Abolitionist, he was. So let's do another responsive reading, number 579. Oh, there's the bug. Hello. It's definitely not a spider. It's one of those, like, it's a good bug. That's it. Somebody just said it. It's a box elder bug. I like bugs, actually. And let's do it a little bit differently, this responsive reading. Why doesn't one side read and then the other side? So this side, you all, you're kind of outnumbered. But it's in the order of service, 579. I think it might not be in the order of service. I might have changed my mind after I had the order of service done. So you all want to start with the regular type, and they can read the italicized part. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet advocate agitation are people who want crops without plowing up the ground.
They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its waters.
This struggle may be a moral one, or may be both moral and physical, but it must be a struggle.
Power concedes nothing without demand. It never did, and it never will.
Find out what people will submit to, and you have found out the exact amount of injustice which will be imposed on them.
The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress.
I'm dedicating this service to the memory of Howard Thurman. I spoke about Thurman briefly on the first Sunday in December. So let me see if I can't give you a little more detail about him. The man wrote so much and did so much that it would take months of our time to really delve into his life. But he was a behind-the-scenes mentor and advisor to Martin Luther King Jr., Marion Wright Edelman, Vernon Jordan, Jesse Jackson, and on and on. He was a friend of Martin Luther King Sr. I'm going to use a lot of Thurman's words because I can't say them any better. So if you are having trouble staying awake, I'll turn the heat down even farther. So do whatever you need to do. Stand up, whatever, because this is really important, especially in the times we find ourselves. Also, his language is somewhat hard. Thurman was born in either 1899 or 1900. We're not quite sure. And died in 71, I think. Anyway, but a lot of his writing from, say, the mid-20th century, the language is, I find it somewhat stilted, or it's just not what we're used to in our fast-paced 21st century world. Plus, it's sexist. I used to substitute the word person or humanity or humans or something for a lot of things when I was using Thurman's words, but I won't always do that now. So don't let that get in our way. It is a strange freedom, writes Thurman. He's talking about the freedom of black people after the Civil War and into the times in which he lived. It is a strange freedom to be adrift in the world of men without a sense of anchor anywhere. Always a way must be found for bringing into one solitary place the settled look from another's face, for getting the quiet sanction of another's grace to undergird the meaning of the self. To be ignored, to be passed over as of no account and of no meaning, is to be made into a faceless thing, not a man, not a person. It is better, I find this next sentence astounding. It is better, writes Thurman, to be the complete victim of an anger unrestrained and a wrath which knows no bounds, to be torn asunder without mercy or battered to a pulp by angry violence, than to be passed over as if one were not. Here, at least, one is dealt with, encountered, vanquished, or overwhelmed, but not ignored. It is a strange freedom to go nameless up and down the streets of other minds. You can see he's a beautiful writer, too. Up and down the streets of other minds, where no salutation greets and no sign is given to mark the place one calls one's own. When Howard Thurman was at Morehouse College, you were never addressed as, and this was an all-men's college then, you were never addressed as boy, nigger, or uncle, which were the only ways you were addressed by all levels of white society outside of Morehouse and some other safe places. Self-worth was cultivated, says Thurman, by being addressed in a respectful way. The president of Morehouse at the time when Thurman attended was a Dr. Hope, which that's perfect, Dr. Hope. And he always called his students by their name, or sometimes first name, but Mr. last name, or he referred to them as young gentlemen. Words matter. Howard Thurman upends, I'll use the present tense. If Frederick Douglass can be living, why can't Howard Thurman? Howard Thurman upends conventional wisdom. He questioned it, always questioned it. Take the matter of equality. Thurman asked the question, what is the meaning of equality? He went on to say, we all know the usual definitions. Equality of opportunity, equality of privilege, equality of gifts, equality of freedom. Thurman says, but in every one of these, there is the germ of a cult that seeks to nullify this equality. And this is the cult of inequality. Thurman says we have to get down to the only authentic equality there is. The equality of infinite worth. Each one of us is of infinite worth. Does this sound familiar? It better. Oh, our first principle. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. If you really get into Howard Thurman's writings and his works, you will find that he is very compatible with Unitarian Universalism. He was a Christian. He was raised a, strict isn't the right word, because it was a joyous raising in the Baptist church, but very committed Baptist. And as you learn from the story for all ages, his family's faith was deep. It got them through difficult times. W.E.B. Du Bois once remarked, this is a quote that from Du Bois, what Howard Thurman really believes, I have never been able to find out. Thurman was so complex and complicated. He was a mystic. I don't know what that conjures up for most of you. The word unum is connected with mysticism. That word means participation and absorption in the one, which some people would call God, some people would call the one, or wholeness with a capital W. I have told you before about some of my, I've told you about one of my mystical experiences. I have had genuine mystical experiences. I guess I'm a mystical humanist, or sometimes a Buddhist mystical humanist. Anyway, mysticism is, I believe, a very real thing. It's knowing, just knowing in your gut that it's all one, capital O. Martin Marty. So, I don't know if any of you have heard of Martin Marty, but he's a pretty well-known theologian. He has a wonderful introduction to a collection of writings of Thurman. The collection is titled A Strange Freedom. Marty says it's so hard to describe mysticism and mystics. Behind the scenes in the late 30s and the early 1940s, Howard Dean was chair of a religious studies department at Howard University, and he was a dean there also. He was also the center of the civil rights movement then, working there with the very beginnings of that phase. Some of these people you have probably never heard of, but I think it's always important to say the names in honor and memory of them. Some of the early civil rights workers he worked with included Mary McLeod Bethune, Nannie Burroughs, A. Philip Randolph, Abram Harris, Elaine Locke, E. Franklin Frazier, and of course, W.E.B. Du Bois. It is just as difficult to pigeonhole Howard Thurman as a person as it is to describe mysticism. Thurman spent his life trying to move his personal experiences from the particular, because obviously they were his personal experiences, toward the universal. Now, I don't know if that makes any sense to any of you, but to me, that's what it's all about. If we're ever going to realize our interdependence, we've got to move our personal experiences out of the particular bubble, out to the universal. So it's also called finding common ground. And we have to find common ground. We'll never be able to dialogue with people who don't think like us until we find common ground. Martin Marty describes Thurman's spirituality as a prophetic spirituality, realized in movements, I love this phrase, realized in movements and actions that inconvenience enemies of the good in the human city. I think we need more prophetic spirituality right now to inconvenience enemies of the good in the human city. Now, I think it's important to remember that we don't need to. I used to teach history. I taught 7th and 8th grade history. That was fun. Actually, it was fun. But it's not the facts. You can look those up today. Just look them up. It's not the actual facts so much of someone like Thurman's life. It's the stories about him. But it's the memories, it's not memorizing a lot of facts. It's the memories of Thurman's life that helps us take his life out of his time period and put it into our time. This time and this place. So I give you now three rules that he has bequeathed to us that I believe can help us today, that I think these are very relevant. Now, Thurman didn't label these three statements I'm about to give you as rules or something to live by, but this is part of my interpretation. And I should also say that I've said this before, when I talk about prophets and prophetic spirituality, I'm not talking about foretelling the future. I'm talking about people who have the guts to tell us what's wrong and to cut through the muck and say, this is what maybe we should do instead of whatever that is. And some of you know this as speaking truth to power. That's what it is, telling us what's wrong. Okay, the three things, and I'm going to give you some of Thurman's words describing them. One, and these are not in any particular order. The three work, they're intertwined. The contradictions of life are not final. Now remember the context. Always, always, always remember the context in which someone is writing. I had trouble last year too. As some of you know, I almost stomped out of here. I have trouble with the concept of Black History Month. Because there shouldn't just be one month, but I think it's important to remember people that we might not, and to learn about people we might not even know about. I have trouble because I cannot, in my white skin, place myself into the skin of another color. So I study, I read, I go to movies, I try to learn about other people's lives in other times. The contradictions of life are not final. Thurman's grandmother Nancy, who helped raise him, was a slave. I don't know why people of color want to have anything at all to do with white people. The more I delve into these lives, the more awful things I find out about in their stories. But we have to. We have to figure this out. The contradictions of life are not final. Thurman writes, the forces at work in the world which seem to determine the future and the fate of humankind, seem so vast, so impersonal and unresponsive to the will and desire of any individual that it's easy to abandon all hope for a sane and peaceful order of life for mankind, for humanity. Nevertheless, Thurman writes, it is urgent to hold steadily in mind the utter responsibility of the solitary individual to do everything with all his or her mind and heart to arrest the development of the consequence of private and personal evil resulting from the interaction of the impersonal forces that surround us, to put your life squarely on the side of the good thing because it is good, and for no other reason. And at last, we must be deeply convinced that the contradictions of life are not final, that the radical tension between good and evil does not have the last word about the meaning of life and the nature of existence, that there is always a spirit in us and in the world working against the thing that destroys and cuts down. Okay, maybe. I hope there is. I think, too, that from out of his own life, and I'm going to tell you just a few things, a few stories from his life, that he could take these ridiculous, horrible things that happened to him simply because of the color of his skin, that he could take out of that thought that, okay, this is a contradiction in life. This is a huge contradiction to the Baptist upbringing I had, Thurman must have thought. I'm reminded of when I went to Florida as a 12-year-old, 10-year-old, 11-year-old, we drove, and I'm dating myself, but you already know I'm old. So we'd stop in gas stations and you'd go to the drinking fountain. Whites only. Colored only. And I looked at my parents and I said, I don't understand. In that wonderful Presbyterian Sunday school I grew up in, we sang Jesus Loves the Little Children, all the children of the world. Red and yellow, black and white, they are precious in his sight. Jesus loves the children of the world. But the contradictions of life are not final. 2, keep open the door of thy heart, Thurman tells us. If sweeping through the door of my heart there moves continually a genuine love for you, it bypasses all your hate and all your indifference and gets through to you at your center. You are powerless to do anything about it. It is utterly impossible for you to keep another from loving you. True, you may scorn that love. You may reject it in all ways within your power. You may try to close every opening in your own heart. It will not matter. This is no easy sentimentality. He is not talking about Valentine's Day cards here. This is no easy sentimentality, Thurman writes. But it is the very essence of the vitality of all being. The word that love is stronger than hate and goes beyond death is the great disclosure to one who has found that when we keep open the door of our heart, it matters not how many doors are closed against us. And a corollary to that is Howard's statement, make of your heart a swinging door. He says the experience of love is either a necessity or a luxury. If it be a luxury, it is expendable. But if it be a necessity, then to deny it is to perish. So simple is the reality, and so terrifying. To love is to make of one's heart a swinging door. 3, keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve. And I'm going to get back to that one in a moment. In Thurman's autobiography, the title of which I am just amazed by. The title is With Head and Heart. How many times have you heard me say that Unitarian Universalists are way too much in their head, that we need to be more in our heart? I should say Unitarians. The Universalists generally manage that. And as you know from that story, For All Ages, the family believed, as I said, that God would take care of them. In his autobiography, Thurman highlights the importance of the church in his early years. He says, the watchful attention of my sponsors in the church served to enhance my consciousness that whatever I did with my life mattered. So he had that grounding. And then, of course, at Morehouse, he gets more of the grounding of realizing that he is a person who matters. His cousin, Thornton, I may have referred to him, I don't remember, in the story For All Ages, Thornton was actually star pitcher in the Negro League. And he went on to make a lot of money from his ice cream factory. And he was highly respected in the small community, the small portion of Daytona that was the black community. Well, the whole community of Daytona was, but Thornton was very important in the local politics. This is Howard Thurman's cousin, Thornton Smith. So Thornton decides that he needed to convince a good white man, Mr. Armstrong, that the only way to get the Ku Klux Klan out of the local government, yes, this was the local government in the black community that the KKK controlled, the only way to get rid of them was to let the Negroes vote in local elections. That's a quote. Another quote, at first Mr. Armstrong rejected such a radical idea out of hand. I'm talking about the 1920 at the latest. Eventually, Mr. Armstrong agreed with Thornton, and they let African Americans vote in this little place in Florida. And guess what? The KKK was voted out of office. Make of your hearts a swinging door. Keep open the door of your heart. When Howard Thurman was, this was in the mid-1920s, a senior at Morehouse College, he went to an interracial meeting of the YMCA, the colored YMCA, but there was a handful of Southern white liberals at this gathering, and one of them made a report on how he had handled the seating at the city auditorium for a concert that was given by a black band. Now, in the mid-1920s, you would sit in the balcony or the very back of the main floor if your skin color wasn't white. This man came up with the idea to have vertical separation of the races instead of horizontal. The center aisle would be the dividing line. Thurman was so impatient and disgusted upon hearing this that he walked out of the meeting. The president of Morehouse, as I said, was a Dr. Hope, and he had invited Thurman to this meeting. He followed him out and said, Thurman, I know how you feel about what is going on in there, but you must remember that these are the best and most liberal men in the entire South. We must work with them. There is no one else. Remember. Thurman says, I did remember, and his advice helped me grow in understanding. The contradictions of life are not final. In 1935, Howard Thurman was invited to be part of a four-person delegation to go to India, what we then called Burma and Ceylon. This was from the World Student Christian Federation through the National YMCA and the YWCA. Well, remember, again, context. Those three countries were under British rule. Thurman himself says, this is audacious of us and presumptuous, too, to think that we, people of color, could just march over to India and start speaking. And he wasn't going to go initially, even though they had gotten permission from the British authorities to go. The representative of the government, British government in New York, essentially said, are you kidding me? You want us to let you people walk around? But they did, they got permission. But then Howard said, I'm not going because I cannot be a representative of American Christianity. The way that Thurman interpreted Christianity had nothing to do with segregation, but American Christianity was and is segregated, and that includes us in some ways. In Thurman's words, American Christianity lacked much that was fundamental in the genius of the faith itself. Much that was fundamental in the genius of the faith itself. Well, he changed his mind, and when he got there, one of his hosts in Ceylon cornered him after they'd had their meetings and everything and said to Thurman, what are you doing here? Your forebears were taken from the west coast of Africa as slaves by Christians. They were sold in America, a Christian country, to Christians. They were held in slavery for some 200 years by Christians. They were freed as a result of economic forces rather than Christian idealism. by a man who is not himself a professing Christian. Since that time, you have been brutalized, lynched, burned, and denied most civil rights. What are you doing here? Well, Thurman responded by saying that that was not his Christianity, that his Christianity was the religion of Jesus. But then this man went on to say, well, I just read an article in one of the American papers, remember they're in Ceylon, where a black man was being hunted by a mob, and there was a church service going on at the same time, and when the people in the church heard about the manhunt, the man had the church service stopped so they could go out to help with the hunt. And the hunt turned out to be successful, well, not for the one being hunted, of course, but because they found him, and they lynched this man. And the churchmen then returned to the church and continued the worship service. Howard Thurman responded, "I make a careful distinction between Christianity and the religion of Jesus. And from my investigation and study, the religion of Jesus projected a creative solution to the pressing problem of survival for the minority of which he, Jesus, was a part in the Greco-Roman era." Think about that. The religion of Jesus projected a creative solution to the pressing problem of survival for the minority, wherever that minority was. Everything changed, Thurman says, when Christianity became an imperial and world religion. And then Thurman did go on to say to this man and others who challenged him on the Thurman on the seeming hypocrisy of calling oneself a Christian in the midst of the race relations situation in this country. Thurman said, "You must remember that the minority in my country that is concerned about and dedicated to experiencing that spirit that was in Jesus Christ is on the side of freedom, liberty, and justice for all people, black, white, red, yellow, saint, sinner, rich, or poor. They too," says Thurman, "are a fact to be reckoned with in my country." Thurman also says that especially in India, he said to his Indian hosts, "There's always the possibility that there is at work in the structure of American society that which is always involved in condemning that which violates the spirit and the genius of the democratic dogma. There's always something at work condemning anything that violates the spirit and the genius of the democratic ideal." We could ask ourselves if this is still true. It certainly doesn't seem to be true to me right now. Thurman also said in his eulogy for Martin Luther King Jr., "It may be, it just may be, that what he was unable to bring to pass in his life can be achieved by the act of his dying. For this there is eloquent precedence in human history. He was killed in one sense because mankind is not human yet. May he live because all of us in America are closer to becoming human than we ever were before." So that was written in 1968. "May he live, he, Martin Luther King Jr., because all of us in America are closer to becoming human than we ever were before." I think we just took a century step back. There are examples from my own life, examples of the importance of the three statements. Contradictions of life are not final. Keep the doors of your heart open, swinging door, and keep the moments of your high resolve before you. I'm not going to take time to go into those right now. I'm going to finish up with that last one. Keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve. You know, when there's a catastrophe, a tragedy, it can be a personal one, but I'm thinking on the larger scale. Katrina or Hurricane Sandy or any number of things, how people seem to rally round and want to help and want to do things. That's our high resolve. Those are high resolve moments. We want to do good. We want to be loving. We want to care. We want to show we care. We want to do something. But then, life happens. Or as Thurman puts it, despite the dullness and barrenness of the days that pass, if I search with due diligence, I can always find a deposit left by some former radiance, but I had forgotten. There was no intent to betray what seemed so sure at the time. My response was whole, clean, authentic, but little by little, there crept into my life the dust and grit of the journey. Details, lower level demands, all kinds of cross currents, nothing momentous, nothing overwhelming, nothing flagrant, just wear and tear. If there had been some direct challenge, a clear-cut issue, I would have fought it to the end and beyond. But we forget that. We forget that we want to do the right thing. We want to keep before us the moments of our high resolve. That's why I always commend those of you who continually show up for the meetings of Moses, for example, the nitty-gritty stuff. Thurman ends with, keep fresh before me in the moments of my high resolve, in the quietness of this place, that in fair weather or in foul, in good times or in tempests, in the days when the darkness and the foe are nameless or familiar, I may not forget that to which my life is committed. Keep fresh before us the moments of our high resolve. Let's end with responsive reading number 586 by Lincoln, someone else that maybe is still alive, I'm not sure. This time I'll read the regular type if you would read the italicized part. As labor is the common burden of our race, so the effort of some to shift their share of the burden onto the shoulders of others is the great, durable curse of the race.
I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master.
This expresses my idea of democracy. Whatever differs from this, to the extent of the difference, is no democracy.
Our reliance is in our love for liberty. Our defense is in the spirit which prizes liberty as the heritage of all people in all lands everywhere.
Destroy this spirit, and we have planted the seeds of despotism at our own door.
Those who deny freedom to others deserve it not for themselves and cannot long retain it.
Why should there not be a patient confidence in the ultimate justice of the people? Is there any better or equal hope in the world?
Let us have faith that right makes right, and with that faith, let us to the end dare to do our duty as we understand it.
Closing words were written by Paul Robeson. I shall take my voice wherever there are those who want to hear the melody of freedom or the words that might inspire hope and courage in the face of despair and fear. My weapons are peaceful, for it is only by peace that peace can be attained. The song of freedom must prevail. Go in peace, let it be so. Greet your neighbors. Drink coffee, whatever.